Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket Weekly Podcast in association with Betfair. Australia will fly back from England with the Ashes for the first time since 2001. By winning the Old Trafford Test, they will at the very least retain the urn, becoming only the third side to do so away from home this century. I'm Yaz Rana, and today we'll be looking back at what's gone wrong for England and right for Australia, as well as looking ahead to the final test of the summer at the Oval. Helping me do that will be the Editor-in-Chief of the Wisden Cricket Monthly, Phil Walker.
Hey. Hello, Phil. Afternoon, Yaz.
And a man who knows a thing or two about winning Ashes series, both home and away, Betfair ambassador, Graham Swan.
Hey. Hello, Yaz. Hi, Phil.
Hello, mate.
Lovely to have you with us, Graham.
Lovely to be here.
So, Swan, are you surprised that Australia have retained the Ashes with a test to spare?
I'm disappointed. I'm not entirely surprised because I've watched the games. And and to be honest, if Steve Smith had an English passport, England would have won the Ashes by now, pure and simple. He's been the difference between the two teams. Both batting lineups have been, I think shod is a nice word for them in Test cricket's terms, four tests, few runs that they've got collectively. The bowlers have been brilliant for both teams. Seamers, Steve Smith has been stellar. There you go. End of podcast.
Can you explain the Steve Smith phenomenon any better than anyone else?
Yes, I can. Better than everyone else.
Go for it then.
In this room. So Steve Smith,
in this room.
Steve Smith's genius lies in the fact that he's got an iffy looking technique that's actually very solid. And by shuffling in front of his stumps, he convinces teams to change what the plan that works for every world-class player. Mm. Every world-class player you bowl the top of off and you try and get a bit of movement with the ball. We simply don't do it for long enough with Steve Smith.
We change after about 15 minutes.
Well, that's right. But what he does, he comes out, and because he's got a weight of runs behind him, he is confident enough to try and dominate attacks. And he tries to, if you watch him, he tries to get a big drive away early in his innings, mm-hmm. a pull shot away, to get the bowler thinking, right, I've not got much margin for error. Mm-hmm. Some of the best players in the world are the same. Ricky Ponting, exactly the same. Get a big drive away, get a pull, make the bowlers realise they're on the back foot. As a bowler, if you're bowling at anyone, if you're not thinking solely six balls, I'm going to land it in, bowling through the gate, can do this, whatever, he's winning the battle.
What?
And what Steve Smith does is make people think differently and think, oh, Christ, put them on the back foot and then change their plan because he's got 20 runs quickly. And you go, oh, he doesn't miss it. And they bowl middle and leg, and then everyone plays into his hands for the next, or however long he wants to bat, basically.
Why do you think that someone as experienced as Stuart Broad, for example, isn't keeping it simple?
It's the team plan. Stuart Broad, if you told him to bowl top of off all day, he would. But the team plan, obviously, at Lord's, when it was under the lights and was doing everything, he went out to bat. There was a leg gully within two balls. I mean, you don't bowl the top of off and nip it round without three slips and a gully. You know, his massive Achilles heel, Steve Smith, is a swinging ball from delivered by a world-class swing bowler, which Jimmy Anderson is. Because if you're just facing a waist swing all day, yeah, it's tricky to bat against. But if you're facing someone of Jimmy's class who can, without any discernible change, bowl a massive in-swinger or a bigger waist swinger, he gets Steve Smith out for fun. So the last Ashes in this series, if you look at the results, over five tests, Steve Smith seemingly had a good Ashes series. The three tests that England won, when the ball moved and swung around, he averaged about 4.5. The two games it didn't, he got double 100 and 180. It's very simple. If you haven't got world-class swing bowler like Jimmy, then we're screwed against him at the minute because we tried too differently to funk it up.
Can I ask you then about Joffa on that first morning at Old Trafford, who was down on pace, down on vibe, on attitude a little bit, and it seemed odd when Australia were 22.
Yeah. It's very simple to explain, I think. Joffa Archer is a world-class strike bowler, one of the most exciting things to happen to English cricket for a long time. Straight away, within two test matches of his career, he's being treated like an England seamer of the past. He's bowling 24 overs a day, 25 overs a day. He should be used, like Mitchell Johnson was at the back end of his career. Australia used to bowl him like 9, 10 overs a day. Michael Clarke would bring him on. If in two overs he didn't have a wicket, take him off. The other seamers have bowled the majority of overs. Your spinner has to bowl more overs if you're doing that. Mm-hmm. Joffa could be 95 miles an hour for the next 10 years. But he's bowled that many overs. He bowled too many at Lord's when they were trying to push for that victory.
And that has a knock-on effect.
He is knackered. Trust me. These games come so closely together and they're so demanding, mentally and physically. If he still had the verve and vigour on that morning at Old Trafford that he did in that Lord's gloom, I'd have been shocked.
But he took 6 for 45 bowling fast medium essentially in the third test match. So it seemed that he can be very effective not bowling 95 miles per hour.
Yeah, but what do you want when you've got someone who can be 100 miles an hour day in day out? Why would you want him to bowl fast medium? He got 6 for that day. He didn't get 6 for Old Trafford when he did. Why would you back Joe Root at 3 when he can get millions of runs at 4? Why would you back Johnny Bairstow and Joss out of position when they could swap and be doubly as effective? It's muddled thinking, I think.
There's been a lot of those kinds of terms, especially on Twitter this morning, as we come to expect anyway on that sort of platform. But there have been a lot of people saying that it's been muddled thinking, bad planning, administrators have got to look at themselves. And
blame.
And there is always that knee-jerk element to it. How much sympathy have you got for that kind of position that people have taken up?
I don't think you should blame individuals whatsoever. This whole thing about Joe's not a good captain, so get rid of Joe. Joe isn't a good captain because England have lost this Ashes. Joe's not a natural captain. Joe was brilliant when he came in the team as a young cheeky whippersnapper. It's like a little thingy of a brother who messed around, like practical jokes, laughing and joking, having quips, and he took that into his batting. And he enjoyed his batting. He loved cricket. By being captain, and I said this at the time,
I remember you saying,
this will blunt Joe because he has to be grown up and responsible. And he is. You see him now, and he speaks very well, and the tone of his voice has even dropped. He's even trying to be authoritative. That's not him. Mm-hmm. And so that has thwarted his output. Even though at the time his figures stayed similar for a while, I bet they're not now.
No. He's dropped 12 per innings and from then 53
this,
to 41.
This joke of batting him at 3, and I think it is a joke.
Why do you think?
Australia said their best player bats 3, and we didn't have a number 3. Joe Root's our best player, put him at 3. If Lionel Messi's playing in your football team, you don't play him at centre back. You play him at number 10 because he's the best player in the world at that position and he'll score goals. If he's a centre half, Mitrovic, will rise above him and nod at him. It's just
profound difference between 3 and 4 then?
I don't think it's as big as it used to be because no opening batsman seems to bat past 4 overs these days.
Jason Roy in the first over.
But he's not a number 3. It might be a mental thing. It might be anything. He's a number 4 who used to churn out runs at number 4, was happy at 4. Mm-hmm. But this clamour for him to bat 3 and the external pressure from the press, from the selectors, from everyone. And when he was made 3 at the start of this series, the very fact that England will be talking to Joe Root to see if he wants to bat 3 is on a rolling headline on Sky Sports.
Yeah.
Means that he didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And this statement of intent by he's going to bat 3.
Yep.
Was that like a bravado thing, like saying the Aussies, we're not scared, Joe bat 3? If I was an Australian, I'd have been loving that.
You had a whiff of it.
Yeah, absolutely sure. Brilliant.
Staying on route for a second, you've long not been an advocate for him being captain. Not many captains survive 2 Ashes defeats as skipper. Would you keep him as captain? And if not, who would you replace him with?
I certainly wouldn't sack him because England have lost 2 Ashes. England lost this Ashes. That's not going to achieve anything whatsoever. Yeah, I'd get a time machine and go back and convince him. And when I say he shouldn't be captain, I'd love Joe. He's a brilliant player and I'd love spending time and playing. And everything that comes, the plaudits coming with it. And I'm not saying he didn't deserve to be made captain. He was our best player. We're English. We make our best player captain. That's how we do it. It very seldom turns out well. If you think it, like the biggest names who've been made captain, both of them, Flintoff, Peterson, all absolute flops as skippers. And because it took away from their natural game.
In which case, so Stokes as an alternative would be not even considered for a second?
I heard that the day after that match at Henley. Make him captain, 150. Yeah. He took a lot of balls to get in. He's sensible. No,
so, I agree. So you strike Stokes off before you even begin the conversation. Yeah. So, taking it down the line and maybe
viable alternatives.
Indeed, yeah. Mutual consent. Joe shakes hands with the bosses and they go their separate ways. And Joe goes back to being our best player. Who's next?
Well, that's a tricky question. But that at the time, I remember saying this. Just because he's like the best bad fit doesn't make him the ideal candidate because of what it'd do to his overall output, which basically is what makes England tick. Mm-hmm. Australia have proven in this series that if one player, a world-class player, has a stellar series, he can win the Ashes. He's won the Ashes single-handedly with the bat for Australia. Their bowlers have been brilliant. Both bowling teams have sort of negated the other, the seamers. he has been the standout batsman, and it's meant that Australia have always been in dominant positions.
I've
that simple.
I've got a captaincy suggestion, but you yeah. know far better than me on this man's suitability. So I think Stuart Broad should be a temporary captain. So hear me out here. For the reasons,
1,000%, I'm with you.
So for the reasons that you said, I don't think Root should be captain. For the reason you said, I don't think Stokes should be captain. I don't think Butler should be captain when his position in the team isn't guaranteed. He's also not played that much Red Bull cricket as well, yeah. so he doesn't have the experience that a Test captain should have of playing Red Bull cricket. Give it Stuart Broad. Stuart Broad has been bowling better this summer than he has been for years for England. Australia have just won an away Ashes series with essentially a caretaker captain. Do you think
you could Broad... argue that they didn't have a caretaker? No, Steve Smith did not have a job himself.
But do you think you know him better than most people? Do you think Broad could do it?
I think Broadie would have been a great job, a great man for the interim at the time that Joe was made. I don't think long term it's ideal because.
It doesn't have to be long term.
No, it doesn't have to be. But I think it would be far easier to say, right, this Test team needs to find an identity, needs to find an ethos. Like the one-day team did 4 years ago, the one-day team were absolute chumps and slumps of the world because we were useless. We played an old-fashioned game with players who just weren't ideal for one-day cricket. Strausie drew a line under that. Owen Morgan was given carte blanche to do what he wanted to get this team the best team in the world. They developed an identity, ultra-aggressive, whatever you say, with the right players playing, and they're world champions. This Test team doesn't have anything like as clear way of playing the game. So it'd be very easy if you said, right, we're going to pick a captain and say, this is how we want to play. If it means getting a Mike Brearley in, so not a world-class player who's a brilliant captain, saying, what would you do here? We'll pick the six most boring, obstinate batsmen in the world, and we're going to play an old-fashioned game, and our bowlers, or are we going to, if we pick one-day players for our team, if we get caught up in the emotion and pick Jason Roy to play, how are we going to get the best out of him? What would be the best player? Bat him at five, and I would say, bat him at five and say, go out there and be ultra-aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I say to Josh Butler, you were picked in this team. They said at the time when they picked him, we want him to bring his one-day genius and turn Test matches. He's never done that. He can't do that at five. If he's at seven and shepherding tails, he could get 100 off 50 balls rather than the other way around. So if you come up with a clear ethos and way of playing the game, then I think a captain will emerge from that. Rather than say, well, let's get Broadie to do it for a couple of years because there's no viable alternative, basically. Broadie would be the best of a bad choice, but I think Broadie would have been a very good Test captain. Mm. But England won't do it because he's a bowler.
If we're talking then about the search for an identity in this Test team that can mirror the identity that's built up in the one-day side, then are we moving back to that question again about the coach and whether we need to split this role, right?
It wouldn't bother me whatsoever if I had two coaches because one-day cricket and Test cricket are chalk and cheese. They really are.
Yeah, increasingly
and,
so.
And it's increasingly so. And you're seeing that now because Test players don't tend to play one-day cricket now. You get a lot of very high scores in one-day games. The batters, and when it does a bit in one-day cricket, teams get rolled for next to nothing. Mm-hmm. But it's very easy in a one-day game. You don't very often get wickets that do everything with a Kookaburra ball. Mm-hmm. When one-day players, because of stellar World Cups against a white ball, and Jason Roy is a world-class opening batsman against a white ball, a Kookaburra that does nothing. Mm. I loved his World Cup. He was picked on the sort of euphoria that was sweeping the nation, thinking, well, why didn't he do that against a Red Bull? People who know cricket, people who play cricket, would tell you why not. Mm-hmm. People who've opened the batting would mm-hmm. go, he's not going to do well. And I really feel sorry for Jason Roy because I think he's a great lad and a brilliant player.
Okay.
He was asked to do a job that his technique and his whole upbringing in cricket is not designed for.
Yeah, so he was on the rough end of a bit of hubris probably by the selectors. As you say, getting carried away in the euphoria yeah. of the World Cup. So with Jason Roy, irrespective of what happens here at the Oval in the next few days, bearing in mind that they go and play abroad, I think they play eight Test matches over, maybe seven, maybe eight Test matches over the winter against a Kookaburra ball.
Yeah.
Conversely, he's got more chance of getting runs away from home than he has yeah. in England. So do you stick with him and try and develop that Test side of his game to come back next summer as potentially a more rounded player? Or do we say the disciplines are so vastly different that we just have to shake hands on this experiment?
I'll tell you what, if he was ever asked to open the batting again, I'd say never play put the poor bloke in that opportunity where he has to do it again.
Yeah.
Because what's annoying me about the backlash at the minute is people start questioning Jason Moyer as a bloke and you forget that a month ago he was lauded as the saviour of one day cricket, and he was brilliant. The one day game, he didn't play for England. We lost. When he came back, rediscovered vigour. If he's going to be in the Test team and going to play against the Kookaburra ball, he is a blatant number five to me. Joe Root is a four. Sort your top order, whoever. We'll come to that in a minute. if you're going to play him and you're going to say, go out and blitz the ball, I'd say don't bat like you think a Test player should. Go out there and blitz the thing. Yep. Smash bowls, put them on the back foot, get 160 balls.
I mean, so I was going to ask. So England haven't been able to replace Andrew Strauss for 7 years. It took England six summers to even field a specialist spinner in a home Test after you retired. England's only automatic pick in the pace department is under the age of 30, is a guy developed a million miles away from the England pathway system. You can see where I'm getting at. England simply aren't producing and haven't for a while top level Test cricketers. So that's going to force selectors to do things that are a little bit out of the box, like opening with
it is. But when it was so obvious to everyone in cricket that was a massive risk to do.
Yeah, but
why does it doesn't force the selectors to do that? The selectors know the game better, or supposed to know the game better than we do. If the county system isn't producing batsmen capable of Test cricket, why isn't there a forum being held about that? Why aren't the county coaches huddled in a room? So what are you doing? You all got level four. Get batsmen. Why aren't the best players we've ever had in going around the country and forming a new alliance of Test batsmen?
So why do you think that we're not producing those players?
Because county cricket is softer than it was. There's this. I cannot understand this incredibly stupid argument going around at the minute that it's because we only play at the start and the end of the season why we haven't got a good batsman. Jesus Christ, that's when you need to be a good batsman. John Carr used to have 1,000 runs by the end of May every year. Mm-hmm. We used to, Wayne Larkins used to get 100 every first game of the season. Batsmen now, if they're saying, it's the start of the season, it's doing a bit, so I'll average 20, I'll catch up in the middle of the season. I don't want players like that. I don't want people to get runs when it's easy. Test cricket's not easy against these bowlers. I want them to clean up in April. Who's doing that in county cricket?
Let's bring Ollie Pope into the equation, right? We were talking before the show, Cook was 21 when he came into the side. Joe was 21, maybe 22, but around that age. Ian Bell, again, 21-year-old, made his career as a Test player, learnt the game as a Test player, right? Ollie Pope averages 54. No, more than that now, because he made a big 100 here last week. He's clearly the best young player in the country. Certainly statistically. Yeah. So why isn't he going to be playing at the Ireland next week?
I couldn't answer that. It's stupid that he's not.
Yeah.
I think those top three places, Rory Burns has done well, but he hasn't been brilliant because he's not, every game, he doesn't look in the first over like this kid's not going to get out. But I'll take my hat off to him. He's done well in this Ashes.
To average 40 against that attack, take your hat off to him.
No. Yeah, but it should be par for the course to average 40 against that attack. He's not had a start. That should be an average Ashes for him. And I think he'll improve. I think he'll go on to be a very good opening bat. I've not got too many worries about him.
Okay.
It's 2 and 3, those spots. Because Joe can't get Joe out of three, please. Mm-hmm. For goodness sake, for our benefit and his benefit. I need to be convinced that there's a Jonathan Trott coming up. Like you say, Ian Bell at 15 years old, everyone who's seen him and everyone at Warwickshire knew he was going to play Test cricket for England.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like technique wise, and if people with techniques that don't work against a red ball are coming through the system just because, he'll be a one day player and counties aren't picking up on it, what are the counties doing? I think knowing Straussie, what he did with one day cricket after 2015, he said, right, our focus is winning that World Cup. And I think the Aussies said, conversely, our focus is winning this Ashes. Mm. We need to focus. I'd be more than happy to split the two because they're two different games and say we need to get quality, top-class batsmen. Maybe it's just because, at the minute, we're just unlucky with the sort of circular motion of players. When I played, we were incredibly lucky to have a top six of Cook, Strauss, Trott, Peterson, Bell, Collingwood, Pryor. Jesus Christ, that's a brilliant seven.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, funnily enough. Was that a reflection of a healthy structural game, or was that a moment in time?
It's a nod to the South African school system. No, it's a lot of it's right place, right. So look at the Aussie batting lines when like Stuart Law couldn't get a game.
Yeah.
And look at the Aussie top six now. And maybe it's because of the times you live in the one day, techniques have crept in. Mike Cussey couldn't get a game for 10 years.
Debuted at 30.
Yeah. Maybe it's just a worldwide phenomenon that one day, there's so much focus on T20 and making a quick, fast buck that people aren't putting the hours in. If I was a young English batsman now, I'd be seeing a massive gaping opportunity, thinking, right, that's me.
Yep.
Play Test cricket for 10 years, you'll be as rich as you are if you play 3 years of IPL. You don't have to be a chance of the Exchequer to work that out. Actually, you probably would be.
Who's doing it today?
on the England coach role, Trevor Bayliss is leaving in the Ashes. Who would you like to see in the main role?
I honestly don't know. I think someone who'd go in and just be very clear about what's the way to move forward. So whoever that is, whoever stands out. I know people are touting Alex Stewart too. I think Stewie would be brilliant. I'd be very clear way of thinking. It'd be a role that'd be steeped in England, if that makes sense. Stewie is English cricket, isn't he? So he knows England cricket.
But he'd be a popular choice as well amongst the rank and file, wouldn't he, Stewie? And he obviously guarantees authority, and he's got a medal or two behind him as well as a coach. He's also, he's a belt and braces kind of coach. I know his official role is director of cricket or whatever, but he is out there working.
Tracksuit coach, isn't he?
He's a tracksuit coach, yeah.
But I think if he came forward and said, was asked to do it and said, I think this is what we should do, and it was a clear, concise, and these are the players to fill the role, then yeah, whoever did that. I mean, personally, I'd love Stewie to do it because I love Stewie. He's a great bloke.
Mm-hmm.
But if there was a better candidate, I wouldn't care if he was English, Australian, Chinese, Japanese, wherever. If he was somewhere in the world who knew how to do it, who knew the best thing for this team and formed an identity or went in with a firm intention of forming a clear identity for the team, then let him do it.
And what about inside the dressing room? Inside the England dressing room, if you're being coached, I mean, I guess in your case, you know, there were two foreign coaches around the time that you were involved. One you got on with slightly better than the other, arguably. Does it matter at all? Because I know Ashley Giles said at the start of the summer, ideally he would be an English coach.
I think it's ideally would be an English coach because you'd want an English system to bring through a coach. Ideally, you'd have 11 players born and raised in English cricket and you wouldn't have to get people who moved over from Barbados, from South Africa, from Australia, whatever. Because you want to feel like you're pure in a way, and you know,
in a reflection of the system.
But honestly, when you're playing the game, I never stopped and thought it's a good job. I can't believe Jonathan Chopp's in the team. talking like this. Yeah, you can't even. I mean, you don't. If you're winning, if you're playing the game and winning, and you've got brilliant world class players to pick from, you pick them. And that's it. So I don't care if the coach is, you know, black and blue with red spots.
Yeah.
So going backwards a little bit, you've mentioned Strauss quite a few times on the show already. A, what made him such a good captain? And B, what difference does it make as a player having a captain that you really look up to and respect?
Well, I do often speak, and my jokey response is you should always have the most intelligent bloke in the room, and that's Straussy. Because even subconsciously, if you don't agree with him, you go, yeah, he's probably right there. and Straussy was just a brilliant. He's a born leader. You listen to him talk, he doesn't he's very clear and concise. And he was just born to lead.
Is oratory a key part of this?
Yeah,
then?
It is. And it's in a change room. It's having the authority to stand up in front of your peers. Because you're not 10 years old like in a club team. You're not the bloke who's done the tees the longest. Yeah. Stand up in front of your peers, tell them what you're going to do, and everyone in the room just accepts it. And I used to, I mean, sometimes Strauss would talk to me and I'd go, that's wrong, in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, who am I to argue, sort of thing.
Right.
But he also made me always feel that I was in complete control with the ball. I was. He gave me my my field to set. That was it. So
he had authority, but he gave you liberty.
He had authority,
to express yourself as well.
And he's a very likable bloke, and he's just. And we were winning as well. And when you're winning, I mean, you could have a chicken captain. You clock in from second slip. If you're winning, you'd think he was the greatest captain in the world.
Can I give you three names who are in the mix, according to the bookies, for Bayliss's replacement? Stephen Fleming, Gary Kirsten, Mickey Arthur. Give me your thoughts on those three.
Mickey Arthur's a genius.
Right.
And I'll tell you why. The South Africans, when the whole KP, Texgate and all that was masterminded by him. I'm convinced of it. The charm offensive, those boys went on towards Kev. that summer that he fell for hook, line and sinker. I like to think that, like, that he's a bit of a Machiavellian genius. He sat there and thought he knew how to split us down the middle, and it worked. Right. So Mickey, Mickey, if you're listening, I reckon that was you were behind that. You were the Doctor No sort of thing.
He's got great facial expressions as well.
He's the opposite of Bayliss. He's a lovely bloke. Fleming, I love Steve Fleming. He's my captain at Notts. He's the best captain I've ever played under. Very similar to Strauss in that way. He had ultimate respect. And I think he got the most out of a New Zealand team. New Zealand now have got a lot of good players. They didn't have that many good players when Fleming was in charge, and he got loads out of them. And he's just one of the most respected men in world cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And
Kirsten?
Gary Kirsten. I don't know Gary that well, but he's got a great track record. Yeah, and he was a brilliant player. Yeah. If one of them came in, I think maybe an outside coach would be the bookies' favourite, because they think he will come in with a new ethos. So, like, this is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone from England would be tarnished with the old way of thinking. But I don't think it matters if you're English and you're tarnished. If you've got a clear way, get everyone to submit blueprints.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see who's got the best one. Go. There's a pen.
We've talked a lot about captaincy on this show. I wasn't envisaging that. I want to talk a little bit about Tim Payne. If you look back at the last Australian captains to win or retain the Ashes in England, it's Chappell, Border, Taylor, Waugh, Tim Payne. His name kind of sticks out a little bit.
How much credit? It's his first one he's won. I don't understand the sort of antipathy towards Tim Payne. Yes, there's a
sniffiness towards him, isn't there? Yeah.
He's captain because Steve Smith cocked up, but Steve Smith bore the brunt of some lesser intelligent players really messing up, and rightly so. He should have suffered for it. He is captain of that team, and you can tell he's captain of that team. Tim Payne has done a good job, I think.
At the time when he took the job,
he was very humble, very grown up, and just, you know, has moved the team forward. So yeah, there is a sniffiness towards him, and I don't like it, if I'm honest. I don't get it. And the very fact that, yeah, what you said there, says his name stands out. For me, he's an Australian captain who's won the Ashes. Yes, it's because Steve Smith scored gazillion runs and he's got a world-class bowling attack, but he's still won the Ashes. So get off his case, everyone.
Yeah, yes.
More positively, Pat Cummins and Josh Hazlewood have been absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Cummins especially. He surprised me. I thought he'd be a bit of a one-track pony, kookaburra ball, bang it in. He's a brilliant bowler.
I mean, he gets his wickets in the same way as he does in Australia. He still pitches it short, back of the length.
He's a very good bowler. And Hazlewood, I knew he was, so he's not surprised me.
I still can't believe that Hazlewood didn't play the first Test match after being rested for the World Cup.
Jofra, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Could I just ask you about Leach? Your impressions of him?
I like Jack Leach. He's not Shane Warne. He's not going to necessarily win Test matches in flatter conditions, but if you give him a turning pitch on the last day, he'll win you a Test match. I'm sure of it. He does it for Somerset, and we're not blessed with, you know.
So we're looking at a kind of executive Ashley Giles,
maybe,
rather than a poor man's Graham Swann.
I think he's taken to Test cricket well. Look, the spinners haven't had a massive Ashes because it's been a seam bowl summer. And we're looking out at the oval now. There's puddles everywhere. It's wet. It's going to be a seam as last Test as well.
Mm-hmm.
The one day of this Test match, a spinner was given the opportunity to win a Test. Nathan Lyon, take your hat off to him. Bowled really well. Yep. I don't think he's bowled well in the rest of the Ashes, if I'm perfectly honest, for his standards. I don't think Jack's bowled badly at all, but he's always bowled at times when it's still seeming swinging about and not particularly hard to bat against spin bowling. So I think he's a very good option moving forward, and I like the way he plays his cricket as well.
Would you be tempted to
bring
Moeen back in the side just because of the balance he also brings? Moeen's in great. He's seemed to have found his mojo back at Worcester.
Moeen brings you brilliant balance to a team when he believes in himself. And when he doesn't, he shakes the whole team off balance. I'd love Moeen Ali to actually know how good he is, because he never has. He's never believed in himself. His first summer bowling spin for England against India, and he got 20 odd wickets. It was brilliant. And then all the papers said it will be trickier next year, and he believed it. He thought it'd be harder because people would work him out and watch videos. The balls you get wickets with in your first year of Test cricket, you'll get wickets with in your 10th year of Test cricket if you keep bowling them, keep believing. But I mean, there's obviously a self-confidence issue, because he has had to go back to county cricket, and he is scoring runs. and he needed to be the second spinner to perform and all that. That's an area that you can't carry in a team. In a successful team, you can't pander to someone to make it easier for him. It's a tough game, and he's more than good enough to do it.
Yeah,
and he's done it.
Just as an aside as well, English spinners under the surface. Matt Parkinson's played one first class game this year and taken 10 wickets. Now, I assume he'll be playing the last three for Lancashire. But when you've got a bowler like that who rips it, and I remember you saying to me about Moeen 2 or 3 years ago, the difference with him is he rips it. He's kind of untamed. He's not coached.
Which is why he was my best option to play.
Yeah. So Parkinson falls into that kind of category to me. He's obviously already a gun T20 player and a 50 over cricketer, but now he's. In his 1 4-day game this year, he's already taken 10 for. We have to start looking at these players, right?
But he should already be on a radar. The second you play second team cricket at a county, you've gone up through England schools, whatever. The second you're in the professional system, the coaches used to talk. I don't know if they still do, if it's still as widespread. I played one of my first ever second team games against Essex, and Alan Butcher. But Alan Butcher was the legend. Was the player manager for Essex.
Yeah.
And then the next week we played someone and their coach came straight to me. I didn't even know who this coach was. And said, I was talking to Butcher on the phone and he says, you're going to play for England.
Mm-hmm.
Better not do that against us this week. Sort of ha 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 and walked off. And I thought, I didn't even know Alan Butcher knew who I was last week. And
so
I don't know
network.
That. Yeah, so the whole cricket should know. And these names coming up, you shouldn't get carried away. You got 10 in one game. He might have bowled beautifully, but it might not. That'd be a lot of pressure sticking. Sure. Yeah, put him in the last test.
But it is interesting that he's already their star bowler and has been for 2 or 3 years now in pyjama cricket.
Yeah.
And he's managed 4 days of first class cricket this year.
So the fact he spins it a lot is a great starting point for me.
And his first class record, aside from that one game, is also very good. He averages 25 or something in his first class career.
It's better than me.
So look, reasons to be cheerful. That's all I'm saying.
There are lots of reasons to be cheerful. We're not far away from a very good test team. We're muddled. People need to bat in the right spot, believe in themselves, and give Stuart Broad and Jofra Archer a medal. Back to it for.
On spin bowling, when you came through, you were at Northants. Monty came through at a similar time. Jason Brown was there as well. What was it about Northants that produced spinners?
Doctor pitches, basically. Our groundsman used to wear size 14 boots that Curtly Ambrose left while he mowed the pitch. I wish I was joking. It got to the point where I could turn around and throw it over my shoulder and get a wicket at Northampton. I played with Monty 2 or 3 times, not a lot at Northampton. Those wickets, we had a lot of good spin bowls. A guy called Michael Davis for that, who was possibly the best of the four of us, chucked it. he's one of my best mates. All right, Dickie. He used to wear long sleeve shirts all the time. I mean, turned Classic. It square.
Yeah.
Because of the kink in his elbow. He bowled at the right time. But he used to have to buy a long sleeve shirt and everything. But he got the yips and then went to Essex and Charlie Charles got him with a straight arm and he was never the same bowler again. But we played on wickets that rags square and they were rock hard as well.
Two players from a small county both playing lots for England? That's just a coincidence, you think? And nothing to do with the pitches?
No. I mean, we played for... We were signed as spinners because they wanted to... Bowl spinners. I think we got lucky, or England got lucky for a while, because we weren't coached, so we didn't bowl spin how you're taught to bowl spin in a book, in the MCC book, or by a coach growing up, which is front two knuckles opening the doorknob. It was nonsense. I, as a fairly stroppy child, I'll call myself, that's a nice way of putting it, I believed that that was completely wrong, because I couldn't turn the ball like that, and I watched Bish and Beddy bowl.
Yeah.
And he used to turn it off the other knuckle. And then Tim May came and he ripped his other knuckle. So I tried off that and I could turn the ball twice as much as anyone else. And so I decided no coach knew what they were talking about when I was about 8. But I always went down and I had a lot of self-belief and I believed in myself. And it's harder to master control when you spin it more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to go through a period of when you grow different times and have growth spurts. The other guys were being played ahead of me because their control was better. But I could always turn the ball more. So on my day, I'd rip through teams. And on other days, I'd be a shower. But I always believed, and I kept doing it, so it became second nature. Monty was in a similar boat. I just don't think he understood when people tried to coach him on the other way. He just could bowl.
Yeah.
He could run up and bowl the perfect off-spinner, well, left-arm spinner.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Duncan Fletcher tried to force him to bowl an arm ball, he was useless for a while. Bless him. But he could just bowl. And I think that's more the reason we both play at the same time. we're undercoached.
And that 2012 series, India, what a time that was. That's, were you one end, him the other? That was a stunner, wasn't it? I was out there for two of those, the middle two that we won.
I think just the fact that no one expected us to win out there.
Yeah.
And after the first test, when Sehwag had 100 by lunch on day one, he hit Brez back over his head for six, about an hour before lunch on day one. And I remember Cookie saying, "Brez, pull your finger out, mate. Bowl as quick as you can." He went, "I am." Like, yeah, honestly, Sehwag was making everyone look 30 miles an hour. It was ridiculous. Yeah. And after that test, we still won the series.
Well, Cook had a Steve Smith winter, didn't he? Basically, unstoppable. And you and Monty as well.
Yeah.
Good days.
It did help when you got Sachin Tendulkar playing and he's in Monty's pocket. That helps.
How do you see things going in the final test? Particularly, it's a similar test for the Aussies as Sydney in 2011 was for you. What were those days like after you'd retained the Ashes after Melbourne before the Sydney test?
I remember being quite nervous as a whole group before the last test because we didn't want to draw the series. We deserved to win that series outright and it'd have been a massive blunting butter knife if it'd been 2-2. So we said, no, I was more nervous for that test than the Melbourne one.
Really?
And the Aussies will feel that this week. They want to win and that makes them favourites in my eyes.
So it's the most alive of the dead rubbers you can get in a game like this. Yeah.
Yeah.
And don't forget, there are World Test Championship points on the line.
Whoa. There are 24 of them as well.
Or 60 if you play a two-test series.
Let's not even bring that. I'm looking forward to the Bangladesh versus New Zealand World Test Championship final in 2 years' time.
Did you hear about Afghanistan, Graham?
Well, yeah.
Are they top of the tree?
No. They probably are.
Did they beat Bangladesh?
They beat Bangladesh,
Get in the Afghans.
In Chittagong. Sensational performance.
Yeah. I tell you what, you have to be a amazing team to win in Chittagong.
This is it. Not many do.
It's hard to go there and take 10 wickets.
Talk us through it, Yaz.
It's a really good finish. So they got into the last day. Bangladesh were six down, 250 to win. But then it rained all day.
Yeah.
And then they only had 18 overs to take the last four wickets. And they did with 3.5 overs to spare. Rashid Khan took 11 wickets and scored a 50 on his captaincy.
I'll tell you what they did. During that day, they watch Ben Stokes' innings and they believe anything is possible. The next generation of Test cricketers, honestly, they'll be chasing 800 to win Test matches in a canter and they'll all have ginger hair and tattoos.
I think that might be our first proper mention of Stokesy all day as well. That's not a bad effort.
That's got to be a record. We've got to finish, obviously, with Thailand.
Naturally.
Congrats to Thailand for qualifying for their first ever World Cup, a 10-team World Cup, no less. They will play in next year's Women's T20 World Cup in Australia.
Swanee's nodding sagely. Yeah,
that is a happy ending to the show.
Yeah, it is. Well, cheers, guys. This has been the Wisden Cricket Weekly Podcast in association with Betfair. Thanks for listening, folks. And if you haven't already, subscribe and tell your friends.